Good morning, Your Honor. May it please support by Mr. Howard here on behalf of plaintiff appellate Digitalis Education Solutions. This is an appeal from dismissal of the claims of the postal order challenge. This court has jurisdiction under the Tucker Act. This court should remand, reverse and remand, prepare an order. Court below A, we have found no prejudice, and found no prejudice based upon a key error at the heart of this case. It has made government insulate a flawed or improper sole source bid.
Why isn't this case moved to contractors and procurement?
Your Honor, we have a pattern here. This is the second sole source bid. And the full range of remedies under the statute should be available to the court. We should be remanded for determination of appropriate remedy because there have now been two sole source bids where the agency was aware of the existence of competition in 2009. Their own internal records show that they knew it was intense. In 2010, they were...
Yes, that goes to the, I suppose, to the capable of repetition and any review, but setting that point aside, what remedies realistically are available to you in this particular case, and what would you say if we were to send this back? What would you say to Judge Brewer? Okay, here's what we want to do.
Your Honor, we would not rule out an exploration of the possibility of bidding, but I believe that beyond the possibility of bidding, a permanent injunction requiring Digital Planetarium to be placed open for competitive bidding rather than sole source bidding. I think the persuasive case for many points in this case is the ATA case, where it pointed out that the foreclosure of future opportunity is a compensable remedy. I realize that's what
you mean. That you would ask a remedy that deals not with this particular contract, but with future contracts?
It deals with this contract to the extent that we are dealing with, obviously, a need to repair or replace these items. But beyond that, yes, Your Honor, I believe in the future what we would see as a justification for sole sourcing based upon the fact that they now want to standardize. And so what they have here is a harm that will lead to future harm. And I believe that a remedy should be crafted along those lines at the very minimum. Now we've had, in 2 years, two separate sole sourcings inappropriately going forward. And Your Honor, to be honest, even the cost of protest is something that where the government has put forth such a flawed sole source bid as this, a protester should be encouraged to stand up and fight this to prevent inappropriate contract, which truly could have and should have been made.
It seems to me that your position is pretty close to saying that there's never an instance of mootness in a government contract. I mean, you could have, for example, somebody has a contract to build a hospital. The hospital is completely built by the time the issue gets fully litigated. And you say, what's the remedy is to build another hospital?
I understand the thrust of your question. I have two responses. One, by the Third Circuit authority urged by the government in this case, reflects mootness shouldn't apply where it's the fault of the appellant, which is not what the court below found, which found that the government and the intervenors were not forthcoming with respect to when the bulk of the contract was going to be shipped. And so that by itself justifies a remedy. With a pattern of evasion of competition and not being forthcoming to the court in the initial conference. Now, to go one step further, I will submit to this court that with the number of schools around the world for which this agency contracts, this is not like building a hospital. This is much more like a situation where you have started one of many projects and where you know that there are going to be ongoing contracts to purchase more of them. And in such a remedy, it's not just simply the next hospital you build. It's when you build a wing on that hospital and you foreclose, you build a bid on that. And I think the distinction there is, if after they build the hospital, they're not going to have another wing, why would the government resist?
Well, apart from mootness, how can you establish that you're an interested party in the threats of prior case?
Your Honor, thank you for asking. I think the key here is the prior case law that has been going forward has been under a slightly different scheme.
Competition versus sole source.
That's one of two differences, Your Honor. Competition versus sole source is a very important distinction because the government is urging effectively for an appellant or a protest in this case to take the government's burden to try to take in a reasonably short period of time and to create into a competition what should have been a competition in the first place. Your Honor, if I may address the most important point, well, I think the trial court did wrong below. It started with the correct analysis, but then it assumed that the five-day period for which there was no reasonable basis was the period in which someone had to establish prejudice. I would submit to this court that the key issue here is what happens when one looks at the administrative record and concludes that there is no justification for an unreasonably short. I believe the trial court's words were astonishing what did it here. And I think the trial court also said it strains the bounds of reasonableness to have 5 days. Once that period, the notice period, is found arbitrary and capricious.
But even if there had been 20 days here, we wouldn't have fallen within the window. Of 20 days, we might not have been unreasonable.
Your Honor, thank you. Because I think you have just done the exact same engagement of a variety of different days that the trial court did. But the question I pose back to the court is once.
Actually, it doesn't work.
No, it's a rhetorical question.
Okay, well, let me try rhetorical. We'll see how it goes.
It's a policy issue. A policy issue, I will rephrase as a statement, then it's a question. Is once you have established that there was an arbitrary and capricious short notice period, I submit that there shouldn't be a just sort of what the trial court did, guessing what would be enough. There should be the government.
Why? This is all about standing. Of course it should be what would be enough. We have to determine if you're an interested party. Not any person on the street gets to object to an arbitrarily short notice period if they could not possibly fulfill the contract if they weren't able to put in a bid in reasonable time.
I accept that. And what I'm submitting now to complete it is there is, in the case law and historical, a basis for a fallback number. And that is in the other non-exception areas, there are 30 and 45 day periods. In the historical note 22, there's a 45 day period.
Well, no, but it seems to me you're changing Judge Moore's question. I mean, you're saying, well, there really ought to be a 30 or 45 day period. But let's go back to the question. Let's assume this. Let's assume we were to conclude that Judge Bruning concluded that we would agree that 20 days would be a reasonable period. Would you still have a claim, is the question, in light of its finding that you didn't discover this problem for 23 days?
Your Honor, I
and
believe
if this is so, why?
Okay. I'll back up and answer a precursor and then answer your question, and I believe answer Judge Moore's question. I don't believe there is specific express authority in the current case law for recrafting a new reasonable period when the period has been found arbitrary and capricious. And we're in a new area. And what I submit that if one were to decide that I don't believe that the judge below actually went through and made an express determination that there was a per se 20-day period, the judge below in the discussion went through and asked a variety of different periods and then concluded they didn't act in the 5-day period and therefore they didn't establish prejudice. And what I was submitting in answer to Judge Moore's question, and I believe it's the right answer, is the government should not be allowed after the fact to posit a new shorter period once their shorter period is arbitrary.
So what you would say, then, I take it from your analysis, is if they give a 5-day period and you don't discover the fact that there was an opportunity to put in a capability statement earlier for 3 years, you could come in 3 years later and say that was an unreasonable period.
That's not what I'm urging, Your Honor. I'm not urging that.
Well, what's the difference between that position and the position you're taking if we assume that 20 days is a reasonable period?
I want to answer your question. If there had been an express finding of fact that analyzed why the agency wanted to accelerate with an explanation as to why 20 was the reasonable period,
okay,
which
assume.
Is not there,
right,
if there were such an express finding of fact at 23 days, we would.
Okay, so if 20 is reasonable, then you're out of this case.
Arguably, Your Honor, but I would like to submit that that's not the precedent you should set, and let me explain why.
Okay.
The reason being...
But when you explain, you better also explain why that your analysis would apply to Kamiyan 3 years later.
Right.
That's the extension, I think, of your argument that it doesn't matter if we were outside the 20th.
The extension of my argument is the 46th day of the UCLA. Looking at the cases...
You mean, but now you're going back to saying 30 or 45
days. Yes,
Your Honor. But again, I want to keep you off the 30 or 45. I'm looking just at the question of what concerns me about this case, and I think you put your finger on it by saying this is the central issue, at least with respect to the standing issue. 5 days is very short, but should we be looking at 5 days, or should we be looking at 20 days? And that's why I think both Judge Moore and I are questioning you about whether 20 is the right reference or 5. Without regard to 30 or 45. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying, and what I'm saying is, there was no justification given by the agency for any shortening of this period. In that concept, what we should not encourage, what I urge this court to not encourage, is just pulling a number out of the air, which is effectively what we can't tell from the record exactly what the judge below did. He pulled different numbers out of the air and said this was too short. And while I'm not saying that the default is necessarily must always be 30 or 45, because that's what the other numbers have been in the statutory regulatory scheme, and that's what the historical numbers have been, I'm saying that when the number is kicked out because it's arbitrary and capricious, and when there is no record to justify a shorter number, that number exists in case law and in precedent as a reasonable number. It can be the fallback number without having to guess what the reasonable number was when the agency acted arbitrary and capriciously. I would like to reserve the rest of my time for the following.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Mr. Rayo.
May it please the court. There's four independent reasons this court could affirm the trial court's or should affirm the trial court's decision. Two deal with standing. One is that Digitalis was not an actual or prospective bidder. Also, as the trial court found, Digitalis couldn't demonstrate prejudice, the direct economic interest part of the standing test. Also, Digitalis had waived its claim under Blue and Gold, and also this case is moot.
Let's just start with the question, if you don't mind, that Judge Bryson and I will both ask the opposing counsel. So suppose that in this instance, Digitalis discovered on day 6 or day 7, would have submitted a bid right then and there. So it wasn't 23 days later, but the very next day. What then?
In this case, Your Honor, Digitalis would still not be an actual or prospective bidder. And the reason for that is that if you look at the record, the record reflects that this was all they were asking for here was a written capability statement demonstrating their ability to provide the.
If on day 6 they can't even challenge it, who can ever challenge the reasonableness of an unreasonably short time?
Well, suppose
the government offered one day. We're just going to put this up for an hour.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's a very good question. Where we draw the line, where the line is drawn by the case law, is when the plaintiff is actually prevented from submitting the offer, from submitting the capability statement, then they're not precluded from being a prospective bidder simply because they did.
If they were precluded from submitting it because of an unreasonably short period of time.
Well, Your Honor, the question is not whether it was reasonable or not reasonable. The question is whether they were actually precluded, but whether they were actually prevented.
Let me make sure you're not saying that the government put up an unreasonably short period of time. That cannot be challenged by somebody who makes their submission within what a court would conclude is a reasonable period, a minimally reasonable period of time. That's not your position, is it? It wasn't my understanding. That's a real hard-line position. That's the one you take.
Well, that's what the decisional law bears out, Your Honor. If you look to the DBI waste case, which is cited in our brief, a GAO decision. In that case, the response period for the solicitation was 6 days.
If it turns on what you mean when you say prevented from, nobody's preventing somebody from spending all day and all night on the internet watching it as soon as something pops up, jumping on it. So, as Judge Moore said, 1 hour would be enough that wouldn't prevent somebody from submitting a capability statement, right?
Well, and actually,
that's not what you mean by prevent. It seems to me what you mean have to mean by prevent is to be an unreasonably short period of time that does not give people a reasonable opportunity to submit, isn't it?
That doesn't actually allow people to submit the capabilities.
Well, it doesn't give them a reasonable opportunity to submit. Isn't that what you mean?
I would suggest that the reasonableness goes to the merits. The reason I say this is...
What then do you mean when you say it doesn't give them an opportunity? Do you really mean that 1 hour would be enough because no one is saying you may not submit? Why is 1 hour not enough? Because it's unreasonable, right?
Because, Your Honor, one hour in most, if not all, situations would not be sufficient time to get a capability statement. Assuming
that there would be an unreasonably short period of time, right?
It would likely be unreasonable. Yes,
right.
Your Honor.
And that's the reason it would be too short, correct? Because it's unreasonable.
That is the reason it would be too short. Yes, Your Honor.
Right. So what we come back again. You're saying, if I understand you, is you put it in terms of it's impossible for them to act, but what you really mean, I take it, is it's unreasonably short.
It's really a question of whether the unreasonably short period prevented them from submitting a bid. And the reason that I have to say this, Your Honor, is because of the Rex Services case, where this court held that it doesn't matter that illegalities prejudice the plaintiff's ability to bid. So the fact that it was prejudiced, the fact that it didn't feel that it really had enough time to do it, to do a good job, that's not what matters. It matters whether they were actually prevented from doing it. And again, we looked at the GAO decision on law, the DBI waste case, where the offers were only given 6 days to submit their bids. And plaintiffs came in and said, we never even saw this. We don't have internet access. 6 days is an unreasonable period of time. And the GAO said, you can't challenge that because you didn't challenge it before the time for bidding, before the time that you're alleging is unreasonable.
It didn't really mean prevented. You mean didn't have a reasonable opportunity to? Because as Judge Bryson said, no one is in your office tying up your computer, preventing you from doing it. It's a reasonable opportunity.
I think we're getting into some of the semantics here. I'm not sure the reasonable. Looking at the decisional law, I'm not sure the reasonableness for under 52 or 5.203B is going to be the same as whether they had a reasonable opportunity to actually submit the bid. So I think I understand what you're saying there. It's not a situation where you necessarily have to be clicking on the internet every minute in order to see something. But the case law does demonstrate that offer contractors have constructive notice of what's on the FedBizOps website. So Digitalis can't just say, well, 5 days wasn't a reasonable time for us to actually see the FedBizOps notice, the sole source solicitation here. They should have been looking at it.
Well, that goes to the merits of the question of whether 5 days is reasonable. What Judge Lurie's question was to you, and it's mine as well, is that the test, whether the period is reasonable, and you seem to be resisting
that? Yes, Your Honor. Based on Rec Services, I am resisting that because it said that illegalities in the procurement, that prejudice to the plaintiff's ability to bid, does not allow them to be a prospective bidder if they could have submitted for bid. So that's like, I guess under this court's case law, that's the major reason that I'm resisting the idea that the merits and standing are the same in this case with regard to the reasonableness. But ultimately, Your Honor, when we get to this case, it was a situation where they had constructive notice of what was on that bid box, and they simply didn't see it for 23 days. So whether 5 days, whether 6 days would have been reasonable, 7 days, 8 days, it really doesn't matter. I mean, when we look at the facts of this case, it's undisputed that this was a fiscal year 2010 buy. So it had to be awarded before the end of the fiscal year. And so, under no circumstances, when you consider the urgency as well as the commerciality of the solicitation, which are both factors that contracting officers are supposed to consider, under 5.203 FAR, 5.203 B, It really couldn't have, the deadline couldn't have been any later than September 29th, which is well before Digitalis ever saw.
Was the urgency due to the impending arrival of the famous September 30th end of the fiscal year factor?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so they had to spend the money or they would lose it?
That's my understanding. All right. So now, the fact that they didn't submit...
So given that you're pointing out these what are somewhat extenuating circumstances, around the quarter, our paper goes on the 29th of September also. So my question is, then, perhaps your broader position isn't necessary for us to reach because we look at a whole set of circumstances. I guess what I'm suggesting is I may well feel like 5 days is a reasonably short period of time in the abstract, but in the context of this procurement, this time period and everything else, maybe that's the basis upon which you're suggesting we come.
Yes, sir. And I mean, to get to the if we're going to argue reasonableness on the time period, yes, it would deal with two factors. One, the urgency, the fact that this needed to get done before the end of the fiscal year, and also the commerciality of the products. Again, both of these are factors specifically noted in FAR 5.203B. These are commercial items. They're items that are either available on the open market per se or slightly modified according to the definition of commercial item. So it's not the sort of thing that you need to spend a month getting together a proposal to explain, you know, how you're gonna build, say, a new jet or something like that. You already sell the goods.
Let me ask you, your opposing counsel suggests 30 or 45 days is sort of an appropriate objective time period. And they would have certainly known that they would submit a proposal in that time period. And he was saying that's the time period, particularly in regs and FAR, I guess, that sort of thing. My question is, are those time periods generally directed to competitive service? And do you think, in general, a time period will be longer for competitive service than sole source? Is this yet another factor that supports reasonableness in this case?
Your Honor, according to the FAR, you have to submit a pre-solicitation notice 15 days prior to submitting a solicitation, and then you have to give 30 days for a response time for most procurements.
Sole source as well as competitive?
I believe it would just be the 15-day for the sole source. However, in a commercial item context, you're allowed to do a synopsis-less solicitation where you don't have to do the two separate steps and you don't have to meet those time deadlines either. It's simply a reasonable time period under FAR 5.203B. So that's why 30 days isn't applicable. 30 days, 45 days is not applicable to the commercial item context, and it's quite clear from the face of the solicitation that this was intended to be a commercial item contract. So that's why 30 days and 45 days is not opposite. It is not appropriate for this circumstance. So now, because Digitalis didn't submit a capability statement in this case, they're not an actual prospective bidder. And as the trial court correctly found, because even if this had been a competitive procurement in the but-for world with a solicitation time period, whether it was September 29th or October 9th, any reasonable time period, it wasn't going. They wouldn't have noticed either, so they didn't have a substantial chance of award. And to respond to one of their points, that is what the case law requires of that analysis of whether there's a substantial chance that but for the error, they would have been awarded the contract. And in this case, as the trial court correctly found, there wasn't, because they likely would not have known about the procurement because they weren't monitoring FedBizOps during that time period. Turning to the mootness issue, this case is moot because the contract's been materially completed. 50 planetariums at issue that Digitalis wanted to provide to the government have been delivered and accepted by the government. So there's no relief at this time that Digitalis can obtain. And Digitalis is suggesting that perhaps the contract could be rebid. That's simply not relief that the Court of Federal Claims can award, because it goes beyond the Court of Federal Claims' scope of review. It's not the Court of Federal Claims' scope of review to determine whether or not this contract should have been competitive or should be competitive in the future. The determination is whether it was arbitrary and capricious, or whether this sole source procurement was arbitrary and capricious or contrary to law.
Yeah, let me ask you about the question of the Court of Federal Claims power here. If 10 of the planetariums had been delivered, I take it you wouldn't dispute that the Court of Federal Claims would have the authority to order rebidding with respect to the remaining 40, correct?
What the Court of Federal Claims would have authority to do is enjoin the current contract.
Well,
so you can't.
Yeah,
so
the
next one,
the next one, would be if you wanted the other 40, you would be done.
But then what would happen is then the agency would have to go back and say, okay, well, how do we procure these other 40? Should we do it sole source or should we do it competitive? And if they have a reasonable basis to do it sole source, they should be able to do that. Just because a sole source procurement is not justified on the record that's before the court doesn't mean a sole source procurement shouldn't be justified.
But then I assume just to take one of the opposing counsel's examples of the kind of relief that we can see or be potentially interested in, something like replacement could the Court of Federal Claims enjoin the government from repairing or replacing under the aegis of this contract? I assume this contract has some kind of repair and replacement.
I'm not sure about that, Your Honor, but no, the Court of Federal Claims couldn't order the government to competitively. The Court of Federal Claims couldn't order the government to competitively bid anything.
What I'm saying is they could enjoin the government from repairing and replacing pursuant to this initial contract, such that you would have to do something else in order to get the broken machines repaired and replaced. In other words, you agree that if there was still one planetarium to be delivered, an injunction would be appropriate, or at least it would be lawful.
At least possible. Yeah.
Possible. All right. So my question is, if one of them is just broken of the 50, can't the Court of Federal Claims order the join the replacement of that broken planetarium? Sure. Right.
No, Your Honor, I don't.
How do you distinguish between one planetarium that has not been delivered and one planetarium that is delivered but it is broken?
Because Your Honor, in that case, the goods wouldn't have been accepted, and so
but the day they were accepted, it turns out it's the government discovers that in fact it's broken, so they say no, this is a problem. I don't understand why the Court of Federal Claims authority of the contract to review the contract would extend to there's a replacement provision in the contract.
Well, again, Your Honor, that it hasn't been briefed whether there is such.
I'm just trying to get the sense of what you're saying is the scope of the power of the Court of Federal Claims.
Again, at the point that the contract's been materially completed, it doesn't redress Digitalis' injury in any way. That's really what it comes down to, Your Honor, is whether this would redress Digitalis' alleged injury of the lack of a fair opportunity to complete for these 50 planetariums. So,
Mr. Braille, I'm tired of listening. Mr. Howard.
Thank you. First, wish to address a point with respect to the end of the fiscal year. I believe that's really addressed in the top at 6301C, which states quite clearly that contracting without providing control of open competition shall not be justified on the basis of a lack of advanced planning by the requiring activity, or concerns related to the amount of funds available, e.g., funds will expire, to the agency. This is not paperclips. Paperclips, public hand put shorters in on the last day of fiscal year. These are far more complex computer-driven planetary management $23 million acquisition. The agency's lack of advanced planning to make this be rushed through in 5 days to meet the end of the fiscal year is not a basis to justify sole sourcing this and a short period of time, especially when the agency was aware of competition. This court should specifically address, and I believe you have to establish precedent on what to do in a sole source environment when you have an unreasonable period of time. And what the government has urged, and I understand the questioning is tempted by, is pick numbers that might be adequate. But I would suggest that for purposes of clarity, once it's found arbitrary and capricious, not that there can't be other numbers, there can be when the process that they've gone to engage in, what would have been reasonable, which the agency didn't do here. But when there has not been such an inquiry by the agency, default to the numbers that are set up by historical case law, the 45 days under Note 22, which existed up to 2008, being an example. You asked me about the Rex case and others. Virtually all of the authority that's relied upon by the government has three substantial distinctions. It's either competitive, that they're as opposed to sole source. It almost all related to much longer periods of time, usually 45 days or longer, and usually related to tactical decisions to not bid. For example, in the MCI case where they tactically chose to be a subcontractor. None of those factors apply here. And in response to the question asked of counsel about the difference between sole source and competitive bid, given Congress's strong public policy statement in favor of competitive bidding, we should not, or this court should not tolerate shorter reading periods of time when the government is improperly sole sourcing something. There should be an adequate chance for that to be challenged, which is what we urge to allow in this case. The court should be careful on the issue of mootness because that would allow the government to effectively, by a combination of an unreasonably short period of time, plus what the court below called their lack of candor, to insulate themselves from inappropriate, short, inappropriate sole source contracts. The court below established quite adequate bases for this contract being procedurally improper and illegal. The prejudice is established because it has been established on the administrative record that Digitalis could have competed with a substantial chance to compete. The only question there is whether or not 23 days is a reasonable time for them to discover what has been posted as a sole source. And rather than making sole source shorter, it should be longer to allow for competition when the government is wrongfully sole sourcing when they know that there are other options available. There has been no waiver in this case. One should learn from its relief. Digitalis has not waivered from attempting to seek that relief. We urge this court to adopt a rule that allows for a reasonable period of time to challenge this and no internal pressures.
Mr. Howard, the case will be taken under advisement.
All rise.